This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on X at JWright929 ESPN. As always, you can listen on your radio dial 929 FM or 680 AM. But if you want to stay up to date and you're away from the radio dial, all you got to do is download the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen. Listen anytime, anywhere. On demand, even. If you miss a segment, you can use the rewind feature to stay up to date with everything happening here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us, my company, as he is on each Tuesday and Friday. Is, of course, the host of VSiN Primetime. He's also the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. Also, make sure you're checking out the Saturday show, the College Football Betting Tailgate from VSiN, each and every Saturday, 9 a.m. Central Time. He's on Twitter on X at 1TimMurray. Tim, good day, sir.
Hello, hello. Good to be back. Busy day.
How did we feel about the opening college hoops?
Gonzaga was very, very impressive, and everything else, I mean, Memphis, obviously, very solid victory for them, but I don't know, it was kind of, I felt like it was kind of a weak rollout.
Yeah, I thought it was anticlimactic for the most part.
You know, I mean, I watched Gonzaga, I was very interested in that game, may have taken a little over bet there, but
Gonzaga might have gotten you there by themselves.
Yeah, they were pretty impressive. But, you know, you look around, you know, we talked about it a bunch, how Memphis, in the eyes of KenPom, was one of the more competitive games, intriguing games, just from a matchup standpoint. So, I don't blame these schools for having pretty easy openers, but it's not really celebrated like the opening of most sports. Like the NBA opens up with their Thursday night, defending champ always plays that night. MLB, it's always kind of a holiday, and then it disappears for like 4 months. NFL, college football, obviously, is always going to be a big deal. I don't know if there is a way to fix it, if they need to fix it, but there doesn't feel like there's necessarily like a... It keeps becoming earlier.
Yeah,
but it's not like it's sexier, if that makes sense.
No, I agree. In a weird way, it kind of opens exactly like college football, but because we're in the middle of football season, just having it back on the screen doesn't have like the warm blanket feeling. Like, if you look at it with college football, in week one, what do you think? We get, what, five big games on average for the whole weekend?
Yeah, I think that's fair. But even week one, because we're so desperate for football.
Exactly. It doesn't have that built-in element for college basketball. It's like we're not just so desperate that we're willing to watch. And I mean, I credit at least Memphis gave us a great game last night.
You know what I mean?
It was at least interesting. But I do feel like you kind of get, with college football, you have baked in, we're just happy to have football back, so you can, we don't really care if you're playing an FCS game.
Like, or, Scott Drew and Mark Few deserve a lot of credit for especially Mark, especially Scott Drew, for going out to Spokane. I know it wasn't at the Kennel, but that was a home game for Gonzaga. And to go out there to open your season, to get your teeth kicked in like they did, more coaches need to recognize it's not the end of the world if you lose the first game of the season. Like, you'll be fine. Now, if you're Duke or whatever and you wanted to open up with, you know, an easy win, I understand that. But if you want this to become, like, it wasn't that long. Like, the Champions Classic is what, next week? I think.
Yeah, I always feel like, isn't this the week? I feel like this is always the week where we used to open up on an aircraft carrier.
Yeah, we used to do that. Used to the aircraft. I mean, that's the thing. What's so crazy is, you know, the Maui Invitational used to be those teams' season openers.
Yes, and now you've
they're
played like 3 weeks
now
of games.
Six games in, right?
Well, we also have the weird thing where Memphis played last night on Monday. We won't see them again until Saturday, and then I think we see them.
Yeah, they're coming out to my neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Which is, like, I don't know who decided that date, but they could have played that game on, like, a Friday night. Like, it just gets lost in the shuffle on a Saturday. It's not even on television, or it's on, like, Mountain West Network or something random like that. Like, that's an interesting game to me, Memphis and UNLV. UNLV, I don't know if it's going to be very good, but, you know, Memphis to come out here, put that on a late night Friday night, throw it on CBS Sports Network.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure everything's now just backed up with, hey, if you're going to play it on a Saturday, like, where's the available programming?
Right. Yeah, just college basketball should exclusively for the next 3-4 weeks just be on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
Well, we got stuff on Tuesdays and Wednesdays now.
I know. I mean, it's debatable what you would rather watch. Like, I, even though it was late, and now I live in the, you know, Pacific time zone, so it wasn't too late for me. But Gonzaga Baylor last night, I'm like, great, Monday Night Football's over. Let's throw on Gonzaga and Baylor to wrap up the night.
I also had this thought, because I'm with you. Like, that, the other problem with that game is, like, for us, I think it was like a 10:30 start.
Yeah, it was late.
I know, everyone's
like throwing on, and it was like throwing on ESPNU for the first two media timeouts, because they had to do a post game show on both ESPN and ESPN2.
ESPN will not be interfering with their relationship with the National Football League. But I was thinking about this with that game last night. Even though you'll always be able to go and look at the schedule, and we know that Gonzaga won that game and won that game in about as impressive a fashion as you could, are we going to, like, that game's just going to be remembered for Joe Few getting absolutely posterized. Like, that's the only thing that we're going to remember. And I got, part of me kind of feels bad for Joe Few, because you, like, if I would have gone up to him, hey, I got great news for you, buddy. You're going to escape being Mark Few's son. And I'm sure he'd perk up. Wait, what? Really? How? You're going to be viciously murdered in real time, and we're all going to watch the highlight 8,000 times in a row. And, oh, by the way, you're probably never going to play enough to where you're ever going to be able to rewrite the story. Like, it's just forever going to be you got posterized. And part of me kind of feels bad, because it almost took away from what Gonzaga did, because I feel like all anyone's talking about in the game is just that dunk. And it's like, maybe that says something about the culture today, where it's like, all we really care about is somebody that was down 40 had a vicious dunk. And, like, I am sympathetic to, like, maybe we should have talked about a few other things. But you just can't help it. You saw what you saw. And it's just like, I think I got sent the highlight again from a different angle this morning, and, like, I watched it another 10 times.
I mean, look, to my credit, now, I never played high Division I basketball. I never got dunked on, but I also was smart enough to get the hell out of the way.
Yeah, like, I can't decide.
What is he trying to do?
Should we tip our cap to him for, like,
no,
sticking up in there?
No, just get out of the way, dude. Like, I get it, you know, oh, man. the more and more you watch
it, it's just, I mean, it's just brutal.
I mean, he gets stepped over. He stumbles getting up. Like, at that point, man, it's like the scene in Friday. You want some of this, old man? No. Like, get out of the way. Just, you look up, you're like, nope. Not going to get in front of that. And just run away.
I mean,
it's a really good dunk.
Oh, I mean, it's a vicious dunk. I guess that's kind of the other problem. It's like, you're down 40, man, and you're acting like there is kind of a scoreboard element, but it's like, good God, that dunk was amazing.
Didn't Baylor delete the tweet? Like, they put out a tweet, and then I think they deleted it because they put something up there. And by the way, Mark Few said, I was just proud of Joe. We've been jumping up and doing our vertical contests on all of those. He did what he had to do, and I think he got to experience what these guys are experiencing, the elite athleticism. Isn't there part of Mark who's just like, oh, God, just on the sidelines, like, oh, that was bad.
Yeah, you know, he's just thinking, like, get out of the way. Or was he thinking,
did he think he was going to block it?
I don't know. I think it was just instinctual. I think it's like you know, when you're the 15th man on the roster, all you've been doing is playing scout team defense all year, and I think it's just instinctual, right?
I mean, he's probably been dunked on so many times.
Right. Like, for him, it's probably like, you know, what's everyone talking about? It's like, well, we don't see practice. But I think the other thing is, maybe what was going through Mark Few's head is, maybe Danny does this right, in which whenever Hurley would put his kid in, you know, he wouldn't let him do anything. Like, you know, he couldn't shoot. Like, he would just put him in at the end of the game, and all he could do was dribble and pass. It's like, maybe that's the right idea. Maybe I'm protecting him. Because that was hilarious. Like, they would not let Hurley's kid shoot.
No.
All right, College Hoops is back. We'll talk more about the Memphis game when we get into the second hour. We'll talk Grizzlies as well. Then we'll also get into the Monday Night Football game during the list. We'll do all of that coming up here in just a moment. We'll start with, we do have our first rankings reveal. I don't know. What are they? Are they doing the bracket? Are they giving us 1 through 25? Are they going to do the bracket?
I don't know, because they can't do the full bracket, because the bracket has to put the top four conference champions there. So I assume they're just going to go 1 through 25. And then maybe after they reveal the rankings, ESPN will throw it into a bracket. But if you're revealing the rankings, you can't just put BYU at 4 because they're not number 4. You can't put Boise State at 12 unless they're in the top. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got to remember that there are some intricacies to this. So, you know, if it's Oregon 1, Georgia 2, and Ohio State 3, they're not going to not have Ohio State in the top 4. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And then,
so what I think they'll do, if I had to guess, they'll reveal the rankings, and then Reese will throw it to a graphic that'll say, if the season ended today, this is what it would look like. Because you can't, it would confuse a lot of people if you're like, well, Ohio State's really 3, but they're technically 5. And, you know, so they have to reveal it 1 through, or 25 through 1.
Okay, so I guess let's start with, what are the big questions that you have?
Where is Indiana?
Okay.
Where is BYU? And where is Boise? Those are the three for me that I'm so fascinated to see, because Indiana should be ahead of Penn State.
I agree.
Undefeated?
I think I agree.
They have dominated everyone.
I'll also throw this one at you. I think Miami should be ahead of Indiana.
Oh, I don't have a problem with that.
Yes, I think I agree with you, though.
I also think that BYU, do I think... So here's the question, right? Because I live in Vegas, and my life revolves around sports betting and power ratings. And we had this discussion last week. At the end of the day, now Kansas State losing this weekend didn't help out BYU's cause, but they
No, but it did help Colorado's.
We can get into that. They have one of the best wins in college football this year. Whether it was with SMU's backup quarterback or not, and they might hold that against them because Preston Stone started that Friday night for SMU instead of Kevin Jennings.
He did start, but Jennings basically played like 80% of the game.
But BYU beat him on the road.
Yes.
And that's a huge win, and they have a zero in the column there. And then I'll also say, And this isn't because I'm a Notre Dame fan. I'm curious what they do at Notre
Dame. Well, I was interested that you didn't put him there, because that to me, that Notre Dame deserves to be in this list of I want to know where they're ranked.
Because they have the worst loss of anyone in the top 25, without a doubt. They have the worst loss, you could argue, in college football this year. That Northern Illinois over Notre Dame, based off of a point spread, is the biggest upset of the year. And oh, by the way, that loss has gotten significantly worse as the year has gone on.
Yeah, this is, but you and I know this, and maybe the college football casuals don't. The worst thing you can do is lose to a MAC team early, because the MAC is everyone's the same. So then when you lose early, that team's inevitably just going to take losses. Like, it's very difficult to lose to a MAC team and have that team be undefeated. For every Western Michigan in 20, was that 15 or 16, whatever that was, like, the MAC teams now more than ever, they're just so indistinguishable, except for the bad of the bad.
And then I would say also, I mean, I think this is a very interesting show reveal, because we have the 12-teamer, right? If it was just the 4-teamer, it'd be like, all right, whatever. You know, Notre Dame wouldn't matter. You know, Indiana would be kind of interesting. But I think there's a lot of intricacies. And then, you know, you get into, like, how far does Texas A&M drop after their loss to South Carolina? Do they drop? I mean, in the AP poll, they're currently behind LSU, a team that they beat head-to-head 2 weeks ago.
Correct. Definitively.
Well, does Louisville get into the top 25? They always throw in that random team to get into the top 25 to help out someone's case high up. Louisville lost to Miami, lost to Notre Dame, so that could really help bolster their standing.
And SMU.
And SMU. So, like, Louisville being just inside the top 25 could really help out all three of those teams when the committee chair says, oh, you see, Louisville's in the top 25.
I think I'm also curious about this. How do they separate the one-loss SEC teams?
Georgia will be the highest.
Yep.
Because their loss is
a road loss by a score to Bama.
Right. And they have a win over Texas, a dominating win over Texas. Like, I think there's, when you look at the SEC, and I'm using the AP poll, and tonight could be look very different. Like, Georgia should be the number one loss team, in my opinion.
Yep, I agree. I think it's going to go Georgia 1, I'm sorry, I beg your pardon, Oregon 1, Georgia 2, Ohio State 3. I think that's how they're going to separate it.
I would agree with that. And that's how the AP poll is right now, and I would agree with that. Like, you can make an argument about Texas and be like, what's their best win? Is it Vanderbilt?
Probably.
I mean, that's maybe a top 25 team.
I think this is where I'm going. I think there's a legitimate case to put Tennessee ahead of Texas. And I'm not even saying that because I'm in the state of Tennessee. Like, trying to explain how Tennessee works.
They've got a win over Alabama.
Exactly. And I get it. It's a home win, whatever, but it's better than what Texas has. If we're trying, I'm not trying to pick, this is to your whole point. Like, if we're talking about a power rating game, if Texas plays Tennessee this week, I'm taking Texas. But does that mean that based on the resume, and that's what they're having to grade, does that mean that Texas should just inherently be ahead of Tennessee? They're both one-loss teams.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's also weirdly, like, I'm curious to know what they do with Penn State, because, yes, that is a 7-point loss, and you had it first and goal at the 2 to try and tie it, but it's like, man, that was as, I felt like the final margin of victory in that game, considering how that game was played when you always use Parker Fleming's stats of war, like, how badly do we get beat? I felt like Ohio State beat Penn State by more than 7 points.
I agree. Yeah, I thought Ohio State, in my opinion, like, I came away very impressed by Ohio State. And they made a mistake, obviously, with the pick six. They're down 10-0 on the road, and they come back and they win that game. I mean, that's really an impressive result, in my opinion. Now, you could argue with the play calling at the goal line was an absolute abomination. I would agree with that. But I came away very impressed by
I guess I would have been more frustrated if Penn State... I thought it said more about Penn State's execution. If Penn State would have tried to throw it four times down there, then I'm with everybody. They tried to run it three times. They couldn't get anything. Like, on fourth down, okay, like, I'm fine with it. Like, you've got
the
stuff.
Why are you putting an offensive lineman in motion?
Well, yeah, I mean, we saw with the Bears. Sometimes when you got to put a reserve offensive lineman in motion, you got to do it. I mean, they at least tried to run it. The problem was the fourth down call. They just basically just ran, like, mesh. And everyone's like, okay, we've seen this play 1,000 times. We know how to defend this.
Yeah, it was, yeah. The play calling was questionable at best on the goal line.
I think then the next questions is, okay, are they going to value the zero in the loss column, right? And I think that kind of goes back to what you're saying. Where do they put Indiana? Where do they put BYU? I think where do they put Miami is going to be telling to a certain degree. Although I think Miami, I think we're unfairly nitpicking Miami in a year where winning, I think, should be valued at a very high level because a lot of people are not winning. Miami is winning. And we can talk about, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, they should have lost to Cal or they should have lost to, you know, Virginia Tech. I think almost like, because people, I think, wanted to see them lose, I think they're getting, like, they're getting nitpicked, I think, in ways that other teams aren't.
So, should they be ahead of BYU?
I think so.
Why?
I think, in totality, their win at Florida is holding up really well. Well, maybe not really well, but it's
still a team with a losing record.
Still a team with a losing record, but that's all, you know, I mean, like, in the end, like, I don't know, like, what do you think happens on Saturday if Lagway doesn't pull his hammy? I mean, I get it, we can do, if and buts for candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas, I understand that, but, like...
Like, strength of record right now, BYU's 4, Miami's 3, according to ESPN's, you know, FPI thing. Strength, like, I'll say this, do I think BYU is better than Miami? No, no chance. I don't think BYU is better than a lot of teams, but they're undefeated. They beat Kansas State by 29.
Miami does have a Miami's strength of schedule is 46, and this is of teams played.
Right,
and BYU's 61.
But then you could argue that their win is better. Their best win is better than Miami's.
And we're now saying, are we saying their best win is Kansas State at home or their
SMU on the road? SMU on the road.
Okay,
because that's a top 15 team. Yeah, I mean, I think it's very, you know, and then you look at this same metric, the strength of record, Notre Dame is 15th behind Pittsburgh, who just got absolutely obliterated by SMU. Like, how much is that loss going to sink down Notre Dame because of who they lost to in Northern Illinois?
I'm also wondering if there's going to be some funny business because I don't know if you're aware of this, but on Saturday night, 6:30 on ABC, Bama plays LSU.
Yeah.
I think they're both going to be in the top 10.
I could certainly see that. Now, the last one I think I want to hit on, too, is Boise.
All right.
So Boise is right now obviously in the driver's seat to get the G5 bid. They're minus 250 at DraftKings to
earn
that. Yeah. I mean, it was minus 200 last week. It all comes down to, do they stub their toe to in the Mountain West Championship game, which at this point is Colorado State.
See, that's why I was surprised that it's only 50 cents more or whatever, less, however you want to look at it.
Yeah.
Because when you look at Colorado State's remaining schedule, like, I mean, Colorado State, I guess, is not good enough to sit there and go, well, they can't stumble, but it's like Colorado State is going to be favored to get into the Mountain West Championship game. And I think, like, I actually think Boise's now at the point where if they lose any game, I think they're done because whatever loss they'll have will be so devastating. And I really think Tulane's the best team in the American. I think they're going to prove that. And I think Tulane's 2 losses are going to be much more excusable than than whatever Boise ends up losing to. If either Boise loses in the Mountain West Championship game.
Well, if they lose in the Mountain West Championship game.
Right, they're done, period.
You have to be, in order to get into G5, you have to be a champ or on your own volition be in the top 11.
Right, and I don't believe that's going to happen.
I think the uproar could come out of Idaho today, and it would be Boise lower than we anticipated. Even though their only loss is a 3-point road loss at Oregon, but their best win is UNLV on the road, which is decent. Actually, no, Washington State's a good win. I guess I should give them credit for that. Like, I think there's a legitimate shot that Boise eventually earns the bye, because the Big 12, I am fully confident they are going to continue to eat themselves, like we saw this weekend with Iowa State losing as a 2-touchdown favorite to Texas Tech, and then Kansas State losing as a 2-touchdown favorite to Houston. Like, do we really believe that BYU is going to run the table unblemished and go 13-0? If so, tip your cap. They've got the 4 seed. But if Iowa State gets back into it, if Colorado gets into it, somebody else, I think Boise State, if they just kind of do their thing, they've got a shot to get the number 4 bid. Because you got to remember, and people, I think, to an extent know, but I don't think realize it just yet, the way it breaks down, the 4 buys go to the top 4 highest ranked conference champions. So if Boise State is ahead of the Big 12 champion, they get the bye, and that would mean that the Big 12 champion would be playing the first weekend of championship Saturday.
So I was buying into this a lot more, and I'm not going to burn any sources here, but I trust who told me. And basically what he said was, whoever the G5 champion is, that will be the 12th seed. It's already been decided. Now, I did say, I pushed back a little bit. I go, well, what if, like, in a world, if your 5 seed is, let's say, Ohio State or Georgia or Texas, the only thing I was curious about was, is there a world where you don't want that team to play Boise, and so you move Boise up and whatnot? Like, if you start finagling the standings that way, and basically what was told to me is, like, no one in that room is going to be scared of Boise. Which, hey, the number one team in the country was scared by Boise. They needed a punt return and a kick return. Now, again, I think Oregon is significantly healthier than they were then, but I think that's kind of the other thing is, how are they going to tip their hand of how they're separating, like, these 2 lost teams? Because to me, like, that's a real question. So it's like, okay, Alabama, LSU, that one's clean. You can just move the loser down. But you do have Ole Miss and Georgia also at 2:30. And Ole Miss is approaching this game like it is their mulligan, if you will, for their Kentucky game to get back into this. But then you're going to run into the situation of 10-2. Then you potentially you got 10-2 Georgia, 10-2 Ole Miss. Neither team's going to be in the SEC. Like, how are they going to? Is it just going to be Ole Miss one at home? Like, they're going to get ahead. Like, I think that's where this starts to get a little weird, because I keep harping on, it's a lot like the NFL in the sense that sometimes just ask yourself, like, who needs this game more? Because more times than not in the NFL, the team that needs the game the most, or more, I should say, since there's only 2 teams playing, that's the team that oftentimes gets the win. Like,
are you buying Ole Miss this weekend against Georgia?
No.
I'm not either.
Now, what I am very curious by, and you could tell me better because you're there, I am seeing a lot of signals that say all the money's pouring in on Georgia and the line is shrinking. That scares me.
Yeah, I haven't. I mean, it's early. It's always a tell how the sharps hit it early. So this number opened 3, went to 2.5 at Circa, back to 3. It's probably going to be a battle there. I always find it interesting when Circa goes to 3 and everybody else is at 2.5. That's always kind of a tell a little bit as well. This is one of those spots where, look, I am a contrarian at heart. I think the public probably is going to come in on Georgia. I don't like laying numbers on the road, but Ole Miss, I mean, you know this better living in that area. Like, these are the games historically where they haven't shown up.
It's here would be the case for Ole Miss,
like,
though.
Congratulate, like, they were awesome last week, and Jackson Dart,
yeah,
I think his Heisman odds, like, shrunk from like 100 to 1 to 20 to 1.
This would be the argument for Ole Miss being different. Last week was usually the week where they would stumble, and they absolutely eviscerated Arkansas. The problem that I'm having with it is we have not really seen a lot of teams put together back-to-back unbelievable performances this year. And I think that's another NFL thing. You know, when you talk about the NFL's week-to-week, the problem that I have with Ole Miss versus Georgia, yes, I know what I saw last year, but that's Georgia's not the same team. But Etienne's going to be back, and if Etienne's back, that helps out the passing game. And if you look at Georgia's numbers offensively, Georgia kind of is running into the same thing that the Chiefs are running into currently, where we think the Chiefs' offense is playing a lot worse than it is, but when you start to look at them like on down-to-down, conversion rates, everything, they're still really good, but they are turning it over at an alarming rate. Now, where you can make the case for Ole Miss is Jackson Dart has protected the football incredibly well this year, and Ole Miss is not really turning it over. And if Georgia is going to go into this game and just kind of, you know, give you two or three possessions, well, now all of a sudden, I do think the gap between Ole Miss and Georgia is closer. But historically, to your point, Kiffin is very good at beating teams as a favorite, but then when he goes up against teams as an underdog, they usually don't perform. Also, that could be a weather game, by the way. We're looking at big time weather. Neither team, ironically, can run the ball right now.
And I also look at Kirby is proving, in my eyes, to be one of the better motivators out there. And I think coming off of the Florida game where I thought they played pretty poorly, not to say that they can't lose this game, but I'm just going to trust in this Georgia team, even though statistically they dominated it, as you alluded to. Carson Beck threw three picks in that game.
Yeah.
And I tweeted out on Saturday, I'm like, man, Carson Beck sure loves throwing interceptions. Like, over the last three games, he's thrown eight interceptions. It's wild.
I was trying to look it up. It's like they are like close to number 136 in terms of turnover EPA. So the amount of points that turnovers are costing them. Like, it's that bad. It's not just like, oh, it's bad on a Georgia scale. It is literally that bad.
So is it? Yeah. And that's the question, too, where I wonder, you look at, like, last week, the SMU Pitt game.
Like, to your point, though, Georgia averaged 6.2 yards per play to Florida's 3.4.
Right.
Like, that is a game that is usually...
And the game was tied at 20.
Correct. That's a game that's usually... Like, that is going to be a two- or three-score blowout. Or three- or four-score blowout, I should say.
Yeah, I've had a hard time, and come Friday, I'm sure the card will be loaded up. I've had a hard time going through this week and kind of trying to find spots, because I have now officially vowed off betting against Indiana.
Yep.
I won't do
it anymore.
Are we
going to take the pledge so that neither one of us is going to let us do it again?
I need it. I mean, I have tried to get in front of this freight train that is Indiana.
We were feeling pretty good. It was 10 to nothing.
It was 10 to nothing, and then it was 47 to 10.
Correct. But it was 10 to nothing at the M1.
At some point, Indiana is not going to cover a game. I don't know when it's going to be. They're not going to go 11-1 against the spread. However, I am not going to be there to find it out. I've lost enough. I felt like an idiot enough. And this is a team in Indiana, since week one, when they failed to cover against the FIU Pit Bulls, failed to cover by 1.5 points. They were 25.5-point favorites, won by 24. Since then, they have covered all eight games and covered by over 20 points per game. Not just margin of victory, ladies and gentlemen. No, covering the point spread by 20-plus points per game. It's insane what we're seeing from this Indiana team. So they're 14-point favorites at Michigan, or home to Michigan. I kind of like Michigan, but I'm not going to do it. I'm done. Man,
that was brutal. Were you watching it on Saturday? Because I know Matt, your co-host.
Dan Lanning knew the number.
See, you know what I think, actually? I actually think Sharon was not. So my buddy was saying, because we were on it together, and he's like, we should have called timeout after first down. Because he's like, by not calling timeout, you're leaving it to where they can throw it, and then they got the big chunk play. I think Sharon was actually going to let the clock run out, and Lanning ran another play. Because if you notice, he had one left, and he hadn't used it yet.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, boy. But that one was the not scoring. They had it first. If they score when it was, whatever, first and 10 or first and goal, and then they end up running the double reverse pass, it's like, whatever.
Surprisingly, that wasn't on bad beats last night.
No, because it was also one of those weird ones where it's like, I had Michigan the whole game, and it's like Oregon should have covered.
If you had Duke, and I actually had Miami, so I was very lucky. If you had Duke, that was a pretty tough one.
Yeah, that's going to be.
Duke was up by 10 in the third quarter and didn't cover 21.
Duke opened the fourth quarter leading the game and didn't cover. Yes, that is very much true. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will get into our weekly awards. But I also want to let you know that we have big news here in the state of Tennessee, because Zen Sports is launching their Big Game Sweepstakes, and it's already ongoing. The Big Game Sweepstakes is exclusive to Tennessee, where one customer will win a grand prize of two VIP tickets, tailgates, parties, and hotel stay for Super Bowl 49 in New Orleans. It's a prize value of over $21,000, or you can win $10,000 cash. And what's more, Zen Sports is also going to award 50 additional prizes, which include two tickets to any Tennessee sporting event or $100 cash. Customers will earn one entry for every bet made in November and one entry for every dollar bet in November, and two times the entries for every parlay made. The drawing will occur on December the 3rd of this year. Also, we are launching the bonus referral program. So if you sign up now for Zen Sports and you use my promo code, that's JeffTN, sign up with Jeff, JeffTN, you'll receive a 20% odds boost when you sign up using my personal code. So go ahead and get started today. The app is available. I've already downloaded it. Very clean, very user-friendly app. Go download it today. All right, when we come back, College Football Awards next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 99 FM ESPN.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options, from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Coming up during the top of the next hour, we'll get into the final news of the NFL trade deadline. We've had some interesting moves as the trade deadline in the NFL becoming a little bit more of a thing. Also, we'll get into the action from last night, including the Tigers and the Grizzlies, as well as some Monday Night Football. But let's get into our weekly awards. And Tim, I don't know. It was one of those weekends that I thought was a, or at least it was one of those Saturdays that was a good watch for most of Saturday. But you were left kind of going, all right, the Big 12 race has been shaken up, and there were some dramatic, I guess, upsets. But overall, like, trying to identify the big picture stuff, like, other than it was just like, I expected Penn State to lose, they did. I'm still not sure I'm willing to give Ohio State my team of the week. Who are you leaning to?
Well, I think they deserve it to an extent to go in there, win it, and all the... You know, I'm a little tired. I don't know if anyone has Ohio State fans in their life. You know, woe is me. Our coach can't win the big one. It's like, dude, you've been to the playoff like how many times? Been to national championships. So maybe I'm still jaded from being there and watching Ryan Day cut his promo because of Louisville.
Yeah.
It's not calling him tough. My team of the week's Louisville, man. Like, they went down.
Yeah.
And they whooped Clemson's ass. Like, they went in there, and they were – there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They were the better team. And they just – I mean, you look at the box score, and, you know, they were outgained 450 to 366. But I just – watching that game, they were the better team. They controlled the game. There were no turnovers in the game. They just – they dominated it. And I was really impressed. And to be honest, Louisville's been a team that I've been like slightly disappointed in this year because, you know, Jeff Brohm gets, you know, big game Brohm, you know, moniker. But I felt like his play calling against Notre Dame, much to my delight, was not great. And they no-showed against SMU the following week. They couldn't get a stop for their life against Miami. But this was the game. This is why Jeff Brohm's the coach of Louisville. And I was really impressed because this was a Clemson team, right or wrong, that we had kind of bought in on. Like, hey, you lost to Georgia, no big deal. And then as the week went on, I started to think to myself, I'm like, man, they really haven't played anybody.
It really was kind of a Texas situation. And I'm kicking myself for not joining you because I was with you that, wait a minute, this is kind of fraudulent.
Yeah, so that was a pretty impressive performance. I can't give it to Houston or Texas Tech, maybe more so Texas Tech, but like I think the two teams that lost blew that game. Like Kansas State to me, you know, is I feel like they really messed that up, you know?
Yeah, Iowa State, man, I was like, how can you not? Like how can you just not get the stop? And it was like they offered no resistance. But to me, the only other options I was thinking about, because I agreed that I had Louisville. The only other option I could think about, pretty good scene for South Carolina.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What? Yeah. Forgot about that. Now, South Carolina, man, you jump out quick to that lead, and then you give it back.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, here it is. This is where the inferior teams lose it. And that second half was just utter domination, man. It was like they went out and they snagged it from them. They had big plays, Sanders, Sellers. You know, that was a really, yeah. I overlooked the obvious. South Carolina, I think, deserves it. Maybe more so than Louisville. But, you know, that's the nature. And that's, you know. You know, this year hasn't been personally the best betting year that I've ever had, but like that was the spot that always makes sense. You've got a team getting into the top 10 off of a big win, now going on the road to a juiced up environment, and South Carolina was ready for it. And, you know, South Carolina, man, whew, man, they are a couple plays away from being 7-1. Now you could do that with a lot of teams. But now you look at their schedule, they're going to make a bowl game, which is a credit to them. And they've got a tricky one this weekend. But no, South Carolina, definitely impressive.
They've got a tricky one, but I also think if I'm Clemson, I'm not exactly looking forward to that game to end the season.
No, not at all.
I mean, they've got Vandy this week, although I think Vandy laid it on the line on Saturday. I think if you've seen Vandy's schedule, They really, really, after blowing the Georgia State game, they really needed that one. And like Diego right now, like I've watched him play so much. He does not, like he is so hobbled and so banged up, and they still finish with South Carolina at LSU and then Tennessee. Like, I think they really needed that one just to make sure they're going to get to the bowl. And now I think it's like anything else is just absolute gravy.
Yeah, and you do wonder a little bit with them, and I know they had the Ball State game in there, but like at some point, is this team just going to run out of gas?
Just taking its toll, yeah.
I thought they were going to run out of gas last Saturday. I thought Auburn would win. I didn't bet the spread, but I threw Auburn in some money line parlays, and you know whether it was Auburn being not very good or Vanderbilt, as you mentioned, just kind of putting it all out there. I mean, Vanderbilt only had 227 yards of offense, so. You know, I know people, and I get it. Like, Vanderbilt this year is 6-0 against the spread with 4 outright wins as an underdog, and they're home a dog again, only catching 3.5. And I understand why people are going to want to jump in on South Carolina. I'm staying off that game because it's a obvious letdown spot for South Carolina, but I also think it's a spot where Vanderbilt could, like you said, kind of run out of gas here.
Okay, this is starting to get more and more difficult. Dumpster fire of the week. So I threw out some options and see if you're with me here.
Okay.
All right. Arizona.
Oh, God, they're awful.
Did you see the final score from Tulsa UAB?
Yeah, UAB obliterated them.
Yes, they hung 50-plus on them. I think it was like...
And through three quarters, too.
Correct. Tulsa, I feel like I'm writing them off just because they came back against UTSA in the fourth quarter, and they were able to like get a win, but Tulsa is some kind of bad. Purdue. I have no idea why they were favored going into that game, but then you get into overtime. I kind of am okay with Walters like trying to go for the win, but the problem was you're going for the win and you're giving the other team you're quote unquote going for the win, but the other team still gets the ball. Like, it wasn't like you had a play to end the game. Florida State just getting absolutely just trounced by Mack Brown in North Carolina. And then Oklahoma State. Am I missing any obvious omissions?
I think Nebraska deserves to be on there.
I was only willing to give them a little bit of a break simply because like they're so banged up, but yeah, I'm not going to push back on you.
They might miss out on a bowl game.
Again.
This is a storied program that has not been to a bowl game since 2016. They started 5-1, and losing to UCLA at home. Now, they weren't a massive favorite.
I think it was 6.5, something like that.
Yeah. But they have USC on the road in 2 weeks.
Quarterback change.
Home to Wisconsin at Iowa. This team, they're going to be an underdog, I think, in all of those games. And it's just crazy to think that they could once again be sitting home during the bowl season. Yeah. So,
did you see the news of the day though?
Jaden Maiava is going to be starting for USC.
No. Well, I mean that's a story. But also, did you see that Matt Rhule's bringing in Dana?
I did see that.
Yeah. Holgerson's going to be the offensive consultant. So there you go. Problem solved.
Also, I got to throw like an honorable mention there for Kansas State. You can't lose to Houston. That team is inept offensively, and you turn the ball over. Your quarterback, who had Heisman hype preseason, turns it over twice. You can't lose that game. I get it's in the rain, but you cannot. You're up 19-10 against Houston, who we believed that they would be the worst team in this conference. We did not anticipate Oklahoma State being 0-6.
Yeah.
But you can't lose that game. And that's a spot where, like, Kansas State's in the driver's seat to head into Ames the final week of the year for a chance to go to the Big 12 championship game and the playoff, and you choke it away to Houston? Like, that can't happen.
All right, who was your Week 10 Heisman winner? I gave it to Jackson Dart. He was 25 of 31 for 515. He was taking online criticism for going out on Halloween. By the way, when he went out on Halloween, he was with his tight end who was with his kid. Like, either, you know what I mean? Like, it was like probably 6:30, 7 o'clock at night. It's not like it was whatnot. So he had some fun with that. But 25-31, 515 yards, 6 touchdowns. He also added 55 rushing yards. He broke Archie Manning's school record for total offense in a game. I gave it to him.
I can't disagree with that. I'll give it to Curtis Rourke.
Okay.
Off of the surgery, what, a week ago or 10 days
ago? 10 days ago, something like that, yeah.
Broken, you know, he didn't break his thumb. His nail fell off or something like that?
Yeah, I couldn't tell. Did they just lance his finger? Like, they sold the surgery, like he had, like, pins and stuff. And so, I don't know if anyone's ever had this out there, but I've had it happen a couple times. Like, where they just kind of lance your fingernail off? Like, is that what happened?
I don't know. Probably was gross, whatever it was. But yeah, he was really good in the return. And, you know, we talked about Indiana just continuing to just make no sense and absolutely, you know, destroy everybody that's in their path. And I guess another one would be, I mean, I probably should give it to Cam Ward. I mean, this dude just continues to ball out.
So I would have given it to him if he wouldn't have fumbled that last possession. The fact that I still had to sweat out another 90 seconds, that was bothering
me. He got destroyed, too.
He did not think they were going to blitz.
No.
Okay, let's go with most college football moment of the week. So along those same lines, I had Duke leading in the fourth quarter and not covering a 21.5-point spread. I also could give it to, let me pick up his name, Cameron Blankenship, the Louisiana Monroe offensive line coach. So if you saw the coach going absolutely bananas, and then, like, to the point they had to, he went so berserk that they had to release a press release to apologize for what he did. Like, that's just kind of, man, it's just good old-fashioned offensive line coach play, man. It's getting after it.
If this was during the middle of the week, we would have lost our minds, but because the Maction fell on a Saturday, no one saw it. Did you see the end of the Eastern Michigan-Toledo game?
Oh, yeah.
Eastern Michigan blows a massive lead in the fourth quarter. They were up on Toledo 19-7, so I guess not massive lead. They blow the lead.
A two-score lead in 19-7 games, pretty big lead.
And then they get the ball back down 29-22 at their own 18-yard line. They connect on a Hail Mary, but they go for two, and they fail. So I applaud the effort to go for two. We go for the win. They don't get it, but that was a pretty crazy finish. And anytime I watch an Eastern Michigan highlight, it feels like I'm watching the game in black and white because they have that weird...
They have that greenish-gray...
It's field or whatever hell it is.
It makes it, like, difficult to even have the graphics, like, when they do the TV production. It's not my favorite stadium when we go and we look live into Maction. All right, where we were right, I'm just going to say death taxes Ohio State beating Penn State. Hey, Ryan Day, at least there's always James Franklin. Vanderbilt's a better team than Auburn.
Yeah, that was a good call by you. I got hoodwinked into the trendy dog, fading the trendy dog. However,
they always have fleas.
I was right on fading Pittsburgh. I knew they were frauds, and that was a good spot for SMU. They destroyed them. I was right on South Carolina. And I was also right, sort of fortunate, but also right on Air Force catching north of 3 touchdowns. How about that news coming out on Saturday morning that Army's quarterback not going to play? Line crashed, and I had to sweat that out because Air Force, who was like down 6-3 at halftime, just could not move the football. And I thought somehow, some way, Army, maybe via pitchy-pitchy-woo-woo, would get into the end zone. But they didn't. Air Force loses, but gets the cover. So that made me feel good.
I had the under there, so that was that. There was nothing better than, I think, through the first quarter, it was 3-0, and you're like, oh god, thank god this is back. Where I was wrong, death taxes, Tennessee creaming Kentucky. Kentucky still had something left in the tank for them. Tennessee's offense right now, like, I think their defense is still pretty darn good, but their offense is just not good enough to go cover, you know, four, two touchdowns plus. I even got closing line value. Like, I'm like you. I can get closing line value, and it's 50-50. If the line goes against me, I'm 0-1,000.
Yeah, you're cooked. I felt that way, too. I was obviously wrong, and we just addressed it already, going against the machine that is Indiana. That did not go well.
Yeah, they're just, I'm telling you, I just accepted it early. Like, I'm just going to keep losing money because it's the Arizona conundrum of last year.
What was frustrating to me from a betting standpoint was I got too cute, and I hate when I do this. And even, you know, my co-host on VSiN asked me, like, hey, why wouldn't you go full game? I went under first half Ohio State, Penn State, under 23. Halftime score was 14-10. Final score, 20-13.
Yeah.
So I got cute. I tried, I think it'll be a close first half, and then maybe they'll open things up. The complete opposite happened, and there was no scoring in the second half whatsoever. So that was frustrating. And
in fairness, I think your thing comes home if not for the pick six.
Yeah, but also, like, Will Howard fumbled at the 1 yard line, and then he had that crazy interception in the end. The first half was kind of nutty.
Wasn't the fumble at the one? I thought that was the second half.
I think that was first half. Double check me on that. I thought that was the first half.
Maybe you're right.
That was the, I mean, obviously Michigan State, I felt like a complete dope about. Another one of those weekends.
We'll always have that first quarter.
Yeah. It's 10-0. I'm sitting there and watching the game exclusively on Peacock. Yes.
That was also the other thing.
Had a great touchdown catch. I'm like, oh, baby.
There's also nothing worse. So if you have Peacock has to be a solo TV.
Yes.
There's nothing worse than just having to have a loser on the screen.
I turned it off. This is
dumb. I mean, I did at a certain point, but it's like you're sitting there just like agonizing. Like, why can't I just put this on a small screen somewhere?
Yeah, why can't this be? Why can't I put it on my laptop? You can only put it on your iPad, I believe.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get into the list. Let's talk about the action we saw from last night. Tigers, Grizzlies, Monday Night Football, NFL trade deadline is expiring here momentarily. We'll talk about it all next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.